Ed, I don't. If you say you're having a fantastic day, there's really nothing else you can say to follow that.
No, I mean, I've been working on the sailboat and went out sailing yesterday.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am Todd Conklin, and this is my little podcast that has been going now for a couple years and has 256 episodes or something in that area. I'm kind of rounding around, and has 300,000 people that listen to it. What is going on? Holy guacamole. It is fun to be a part of this podcast, but somewhat surprising to me because I never imagined ever for a million years, this would tickle so many people's fancies. This would provide information and ongoing discussion and community the way it's done that. But that was the goal. I mean, the entire goal always was just to build community and have discussion and interview and talk and have conversations. And the interviews never really worked out very well. But the conversations work out great. I mean, they're really fun. And like I said, you know, we want to talk to a bunch of different people, and today's no different. Today, we're going to talk to a practitioner extraordinaire. I think that's French. I'm not sure. A long-term practitioner in safety differently, kind of the new view. Safety 2 guy is what he calls himself. In fact, his email is, I think, Tom at Safety 2. It's very funny. But he's also really good and really interesting. For my life, well, for those of you that care, I have not been kicked off a plane yet, but it could all change today. I got a flight today at 6:05, but it has been delayed, according to the email, to 6:10, which is such a lie. Why do they even do that? Look, 6:10 is not late if the original time was 6:05, because everybody knows you're not going to leave at 6:05. So don't even try it with me. But because you sent out a delay message, you know what you're doing. You're starting to erode my belief the plane will be on time, so that when you tell me it's going to be really late and I'm going to miss my connection, I won't be freaked out. I'm on to you. I am complete on to you. I know that's what you're doing. And that's why you do it, airlines, so don't act like you don't. We've been on to you for years. We just haven't let on, but now we're just blabbing it out. I did get a lot of feedback on the airline podcast. I should talk about that as well. But the quick answer is everything's good here, and the meeting on June 9th is filling up quickly, but there's still more room, according to Ron Gant, and you're more than welcome to come and have a hangout day with Sydney Decker and myself, where we will chat about a lot of exciting stuff. The big meeting is the one in Berlin. So, you know, we're doing this open class in Berlin by request. So we got all these requests. Please do one in Europe. Please do one in Europe. So, I mean, he's not going to do that because that sounds really fun. So we get a place. Andrea hooks us up with a place in Berlin, a cool training center, and we're going to do this training. I got it all kind of lined up and set up, and it's going to be really fun. It's the first week of September. It's like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of the first full week of September. And I think it's right after Memorial Day or something. That's the time when they had open, and it was a good time for us and stuff. So we're going to do a full 3-day class. It's going to be 1 day fundamentals, pretty much deep dive fundamentals. Then we'll do a day and a half of learning. So it'll be like full day, half day. And I think it's going to do really well. I think what surprises me, I think people are coming to this thing. Well, that's cool. And the people in Europe, it's kind of a local call. So I do kind of expect them to step up to the plate. I mean, if they can. But other people are traveling over for it. So that should be kind of fun as well. Looking forward to that. Man, there's so many exciting things to tell you. I can't even wait to get into the podcast. I've got a couple really big ones coming up. I think you're going to vibe on them pretty greatly. There's one that's really remarkable. Well, I'll save that and talk about this more. Now we're going to talk about Tom McDaniel and listening to a practitioner speak. But I think this podcast is really pretty cool because Tom's been at this for a long time. So he's kind of... he sort of knows the journey because he's done the journey. So he can tell you that you're going to initially be really fixated with air reduction tools, and then that kind of goes away, and that blame is really important, and you have to monkey with that a long time. But now he's into really this new view of safety and really safety learning. The best thing to do is I should just put Tom on and kind of shut up. So listen carefully. This, my friends, is Tom McDaniel, human performance safety 2 practitioner extraordinaire. It's a great conversation. Enjoy.
It's one deliverable of bringing human performance and new safety or safety 2 together that it opens up so many new possibilities in that area that, you know, there's just new ways to view things and new actions we can put in place. So without further ado, I will introduce myself if we're ready.
You bet.
It's a good time. Okay. So I am Tom McDaniel. I've just a little bit of my background. I've actually been in the energy industry since just late 1980. And since that time, it's about the same time I married my wife. And so in those 37 years, we figure we've probably been together probably about 15 of those years, which is probably why our marriage has lasted so long. So at least that's her thinking. So, but I've been in the energy industry in basically quality, environmental health and safety positions. I also worked as a field engineer for a while. So I'm actually used to running projects, working with tooling and so forth, which I think has brought a different perspective to EHS than some other people, because I've actually done everything wrong at least once. If somebody has violated a rule, it's probably me. But when I first got involved in environmental health and safety, it's probably the thing that saved my life, because I was going down one of those pathways that probably would have led to something very serious occurring. So it you know, not only have I helped other people in my career, I definitely have helped myself. I've spent most of the last 30 years, supporting Westinghouse, and then Westinghouse Power Generation became Siemens. And it's been a really interesting career working for a large global organization. We've just had, just having access to so many resources and being able to work the globe has been the most fascinating part, because I've been able to see what safety is like in different cultures, in different countries, different regions. And been able to look at the different maturity levels and actually come up with ways to improve EHS, being that it was different ways. You know, there's not one size fits all. You have to have a variety of different methods to put in place. The good part about that is, Todd, is, you know, in every situation, we were able to improve things. So even though people were at different maturity levels, even though they process safety a little bit differently, you know, there still was plenty of room for improvement, and you know, we have the results to show for it.
Well, so one of your areas of expertise, which I find super interesting, but I think the people that are listening are going to find it a million times more interesting than even I do, is in that mysterious connection between contractor and employer, you know, that construction site where you've got subcontractors and subs to the subs and subs to the subs to the subs. How have you really looked at and understood how we manage contractor and their safety operation, their capacity to actually do high risk work on our site safely?
Well, that's a really great subject area. And I think what's really led to new learning was the way that we really began to incorporate human performance and definitely the new view of human performance, not the early views from the 1990s, and began to look at ways that we would apply this thinking into our organizations. And one
now,
of the
ho- hold on
that,
a minute, Tom, if I can interrupt you. You just said something pretty big there. You said not the old 1990s view of human performance, but the new view of human performance. Talk to me about the difference between that old view and the new view.
Well, the old view of human performance and really came out at the same time when behavior-based safety was prevalent in industry. And a lot of people looked at human performance as still as they looked at behavior-based safety was, You know, the human is the problem. The worker's the problem. And this is a tool to fix the worker. So behavior-based safety in this country in the early 1990s, I put down as a failure. I think it was probably one of our biggest failures because we were attempting to fix the worker, thinking that the worker was the problem. And this really stemmed from early incident analysis where they broke it apart between unsafe acts and unsafe conditions. And after, you know, the OSHA regulations addressed the unsafe conditions, we still had incidents. So everyone said, well, hey, it's unsafe acts. It must be those pesky workers, and we're going to fix them. So early human performance was still about trying to fix those workers. It still was like, you know, the system is safe, but those workers are, they upset the system, and we need to fix them. And say, once again, it was failed, although there was some behavior-based safety programs that were successful, but I kind of identify those as these real high energy input programs that they were continually observing and coaching people. And, you know, they did make a difference, but the moment they stopped, it went right back to ground zero. It really didn't change anything. But some of them were successful. I have many stories about the petrochemical industry and working in that industry. And, you know, where it's where we had five people observing every one person working. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous at that time. But, you know, early human performance programs were definitely centered on, you know, that somehow we can use these tools and practices to fix the human. And some of those are still out there in industry today. I find it unfortunate that some people that are still teaching human performance teach that old method rather than the new view. You know, the new view, as you're well aware, and hopefully a lot of the audience is aware as well, that you know, it's really understanding that people will make errors, you know, errors in cognition, errors in judgment. I like to say they'll have errors in anywhere from, you know, observation, assessment, design, implementation, or feedback. They will have errors. And if you truly want to have a safe system, you have to account for those errors. You have to accept that people will have these, and then you begin to build the management systems that begin to intervene between that error and an incident. So as we always say, you can't be error-free, but you can be incident-free. And, you know, there's a few industries that you can look at and that, you know, they've come pretty close. I really model a lot of what I do after aviation. I think that they've probably learn the most. You know, they're doing tens of thousands of missions a day, and for the most part they're successful, but they're successful because they realize that humans can't be perfect. Humans will adapt, and is that adaptation within, you know, the typical norms and boundaries to, you know, create safety.
So how does that fold over to contractors? How does that make you into that contractor question?
Well, this is a really good part. Is once we began to look at contractors differently, you know, with the understanding that contractors do have a very high rate of incidents, whether it's safety, quality, inefficiency, rework, so forth. There's a lot there. We began to break it down, and we began to see that, yeah, when a contractor comes on site, they're just like anybody else that's coming in. That they have anybody coming to a new situation has a high potential for error that will lead to an incident. You know, just because it's a new system, maybe they bring their own standards with them. Maybe it's, you know, they're not going to ask questions for fear of reprisal and so forth. So a contractor is essentially always a new employee. Now, just because they have that high potential, it doesn't mean that you have to allow incidents to occur. There are things that you can put in place. But on the other side of that, there is a bathtub curve, as we like to say, that now begins to look at employees that are experienced. And as we all know, the more experienced employees you have, the more likely they are to be in some level of violation. Now, these are typically low levels of violation, the necessary, the practical. Could be up at the cowboy, cowgirl level. But it's definitely not malicious and sabotage. But you know, they're all also have that high probability of being in violation. So what you have is a situation where you have people potentially at both ends of the bathtub curve coming to work with you on your site. You know, they're new, so they have a high potential of error that can lead to an incident. And they're also they're in violation that also can lead to an incident. So you have to look at them differently. Now, we hold to a truth, or I definitely hold to a truth, that nobody comes to work to cause a safety or quality incident. People definitely want to do a good job, but the potential for incidents is still there. And when you look at contractors from that perspective, you can begin to build in defenses against it. Once again, I can't stop human error or errors in cognition. I can't stop it. I can't necessarily stop people from being in low levels of violation because, you know, sometimes those are the best practices, but they are in low levels of violation. And sometimes it's difficult to see and especially manage right there on the spot. So now that I accept that these people have, you know, they bring this baggage with them of violation and the potential for error, I can now begin to design systems that will intervene between that and an incident. It's really just accepting the point that they are, you know, they are a hazard and they don't necessarily realize it. You know, they're an error likely situation. They are a risk. And there's things that we can definitely do to stop it from progressing.
What's that look like? What's that look like in real life?
So, yeah, definitely, you know, new contractors, you know, definitely look, you know, to me like a new employee. And what would you expect with a new employee walking in? Would you expect them to understand, you know, all the risks, hazards, error likely situations? Of course not. You would treat them differently. Well, that's one of the things we have to do with contractors coming in, regardless of their level of experience in the certain domain that they work. Let's say they're an electrician, maybe they work on the fire extinguishing systems, but regardless of what the contractor is, they may have expertise in that area, but they don't have expertise and familiarity with you. And that's where the hazards and the risks and the error likely situations come into being that, you know, they're bringing their past with them. As in the aviation industry, they speak it as, you know, with experience comes baggage. I mean, it's absolutely true. You know, they bring in their way of doing things, and they could have been working for another customer that had very low standards right before you. Maybe a customer where production was far ahead of safety. And so this is what they bring with them. And as we spoke about on the other end too, you know, you definitely have employees that work for contractors too that have probably been there a long time or been in industry a long time that have learned every possible shortcut. They take, you know, they take chances all the time, you know, because we all know as humans, if we take a shortcut once and we get away with it, we're going to do it again. It's just our basic way of doing things. And so we've got a lot of people that come in as contractors, you know, that are in these low levels of violation. Then so you've really got people at with contractors, you've got these people that are both ends of this bathtub curve. One at the very beginning where they've got this high potential for error that can lead to an incident. And two at the very end, you know, these people in high violation. So, there, you know, right away as you begin to recognize that, there's things now that you can do with it. You know, if you didn't recognize it before, hey, you don't address it. Now that you begin to recognize it, you can address it and do it differently. You know, we did a lot of looking at our incidents, and, you know, really about 80% of the most serious incidents do come from contractors that come to your site. Once again, you know, they're not there to cause harm. They're not there to hurt themselves or somebody else. You know, they're there to do, they, you know, they want to do a good job, but they don't understand. So we have to treat them and manage them differently. You know, obviously, every company, we all hire contractors to come in to help us. But, you know, because they will have an expertise in a certain domain that we don't have. But we have to understand the risks associated with that and once again, manage it differently.
So if you were going to give somebody a hint, what does that management differently look like?
as I say, with a contractor comes in, I look at them, you know, regardless of experience, I look at them as being a brand new employee that is also probably taking a lot of risks because they don't know any better. So I look at them as saying, you're dangerous. You're dangerous to me, our company, our customer, the equipment we're working on. And I just have to manage them differently with that understanding. You know, and it's not against the person. I mean, I'm not finding fault against the person. It's just the background where they've come from. You know, once again, it's in a brand new situation. Todd, either you or I could be forced into a new situation, and we're going to have this high potential for error as well. You know, we recognize it. We may be experts.
Rasmussen calls it, you know, knowledge base, right? It's a coin flip, if you remember the old performance modes model. So we know they're coming in that way. This is a pretty interesting way to look at that. But how do you keep that from being patronizing or offensive to the contractor? Because, I mean, let's be honest. We hire contractors to accept the risk to a great extent. They do the high-risk work. They have higher exposure. How do we build that relationship with them so that they're successful on our job sites?
Well, what's really worked well for me is just bringing forth the distinction of you know, error, whether you want to call it human error or errors in cognition, and violation, and just making them aware of it themselves. And then we begin to partner with them for success. You know, once again, we're not weeding people out saying you're high risk, you're dangerous, you know, we don't want you here. Just the opposite. We want you here, but we want you to be safe. We want you to do quality work. We want to work with you to do this. And, you know, they may have expertise in a certain domain because we don't, and that's great. That's fine. But we have the expertise in these other domains to help ensure that they are successful. So it's really a partnership. That's what we're doing.
I like the idea, although I'm going to have to think on this a while, Tom, but I like the idea of realizing they're dangerous, that they have higher level of risk exposure. They're going to have less familiarity on the site. They're dangerous. So they're the highest risk employees, and therefore, because they're the highest risk workers on the site, they need the most protection, the most care and feeding.
Yeah, and you know, and it's not to embarrass them. You know, it's just the opposite. It's to get them to understand when they walk into any situation that this is what they're faced against. And it's hopefully it's something that they take with them when they go to work for other contractors as well. You know, once again, they have expertise in a certain domain. But we look at from the perspective that, yeah, but we have a way for you to do this work and not injure yourself or cause harm to anybody else or the equipment. You know, this is what we're going to enforce. This is what we're going to work with you to achieve. And we've been very successful with a lot of different contractors. I mean, the same type of training I've done for my own people, I've done for contractors. You know, as I say, safety is not proprietary. This is something we share with everybody. We will become successful by working together, not by working against each other. And this is, you know, and once again, this is why we achieve the results we achieve. It's, you know, we can't always necessarily, you know, have, you know, the best trained people, the most familiar people show up on a project site, but we can certainly work with whatever we have and be successful. That's reality. You know, that's what we're going to be faced with as industry is all the time. You know, we've got people, you know, and we've got to achieve success with those people.
Have you thought about a way to make this transportable? Have you thought about a way to package this to write a book why don't you do a training for how to manage contractor safety? I mean, it seems like this conversation's not had or is not being held. I think partially because we don't think about that bathtub curve. I think you got lots to say. How come you aren't? Where's your book? I guess that's what I'm saying.
It's coming. That's all I can say. It's coming. yeah, there's a lot. I've been working with some different companies, mostly through different organizations like the Zero Harm Organization in New Zealand, to kind of open up this thinking in areas that they could, begin to do things a little bit differently, and then give them the tools and practices to work with. This is where it needs to occur, that people need to understand that there is a problem out there. We have to achieve success with the people that we have. And by building these strong, management systems, they will allow us to intervene between all this error and violation and be successful. Once again, we're never going to have the perfect person show up that has all the training, that has all the knowledge, that's a perfect worker. It's unrealistic. No matter how good you are, you're going to make mistakes. If you can afford to live with those mistakes, don't worry about it. If you can't afford to live with the consequences, I'm giving you something to do about it to stop it from occurring. That's the whole part about this. Safety, quality, efficiency, profitability, customer satisfaction, it's all the same. They're all outputs of the same process. I certainly, as a lot of themed present, a lot of my presentations, I've had different themes over the years. One of them is you can't fix safety by focusing on safety. You really need to start looking at the organization, at the management systems, how the organization communicates, how they recognize risks, how they manage risk. And this is how, you can begin to be successful and work with contractors.
I'll just ask the question. If I want to get a hold of you and talk more about this, what do I do?
Easiest way to get a hold of me is through my email address, which is tom.safety2, that's the number 2, @gmail.com, or just reach out to me through LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as well, so just get a hold of me. I'm glad to have conversations with you. I am beginning to consult in industry, so I'm set up. I'd love to come help you achieve success. So please reach out to me.
And there you have it. That was Tom. Interesting, huh? I mean, he's really thoughtful, and he's kind of in a new place in his life, starting some new stuff. He's got a sailboat and lives in Tampa, so I think I would just hang out there personally, or make people come visit me there. That would be good as well. But he's brilliant. And what he's brilliant at is this whole idea of contractor flow down. How do we manage contractors? How do we think about the bathtub curve he talked about? And really, I thought the most important comment, well, there were a lot of important comments, but the one that I thought was most interesting, I bet it's going to be the name of this, is with experience comes baggage. That's really true. There also, comes stability, but there's quite a bit of baggage in that. That's the podcast. Maybe we'll see you in Berlin in September. That'd be fun. Or some airport. I'll always look for you in an airport. Look for me. You'll see me. I'll have a rose in my lapel. Until then, my friends, I hope you get what you need. That's very important to me. Have as much fun as you possibly can. Learn something new every single day. And for goodness sakes, y'all, be safe.